I thank you for listening to my commentary for this week, and I'd like to welcome the listeners of KBTK, the Big Talker, in Flagstaff, Prescott, Arizona, who'll now have a chance to listen to the truth that mainstream media will not give you. As predicted, Bernie Sanders won the New Hampshire primary, Pete Buttigieg was second, Amy Klobuchar came in third, Elizabeth Warren fourth, and Joe Biden came in fifth and did not even break double digits. Andrew Yang had smelled enough of the roses, and so he dropped out. The biggest surprise of the night was Klobuchar's margin of victory over Warren and Biden. She garnered a greater percentage of votes than Warren and Biden combined. Now the Democrats move on to South Carolina, where socialism does not play nearly as well as in New Hampshire. Joe Biden's campaign is running on fumes, and even a win in South Carolina may not be enough to revive that campaign unless he was to win by a blown-out margin, and that's not expected. The Democrat Party shot Biden in the foot by their dogged pursuit of impeachment of Donald Trump. It was bound to come out that Joe and his son Hunter Biden had many questions to answer about corruption, and that news derailed the Biden campaign. In all fairness to Trump and to the Bidens, it's time for a serious investigation of Ukraine corruption and how deep Hunter Biden and his father Joe were into it. If Donald Trump was wrong, and there was no reason to look into the corrupt Burisma operation where Hunter Biden sat on the board and received millions of dollars in an industry that he had no experience in, then the American people need to know that, and the president should be held accountable. If Trump was right to hold up more American taxpayer money to Ukraine until the allegations of Burisma corruption and the Biden's part in it had been answered, then the American people have a right to know that, the entire Democrat impeachment farce was indeed a partisan witch hunt. Let's not let the question simply fade away while Democrats continue to leak and lie in pursuit of the president. Demand an investigation now and let the chips fall where they may. In the meantime, support for Democrats is getting weaker, and the American economy is getting stronger. Given the sellout by the mainstream media, the American public has to dig deep to get to the truth. The problem is that most average, ordinary Americans don't have the time to spend on digging for news. Democrats and their media allies are well aware of that, and they take every opportunity to mislead. No human being is wrong 100% of the time. Yet the Democrats and their media allies would have you believe that Donald Trump is wrong 100% of the time. They refuse to acknowledge the incredible job that a businessman, Donald Trump, as president, has done in just 3 short years. In spite of the monkeys that have been thrown on his back to burden him down. Democrats realized some time ago that their 24 or so candidates for president were incapable of beating Donald Trump in the 2020 election. Many of those candidates lost momentum and have dropped out of the race. Others, like Elizabeth Warren and Joe Biden, are hanging on by their fingernails. While Mayor Pete Buttigieg has been polling well in Iowa and New Hampshire, he has little chance of getting substantial support from the black community, whose religious roots are at odds with Buttigieg's homosexuality. While the media hypes Amy Klobuchar's rise in the polls, she has little chance of winning the Democrat nomination. And that leaves the Democrat Party in a quandary. The party has veered so far to the left into socialism, and that puts Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders at the front of the donkey parade. His backing comes from a far-left liberal base that includes starry-eyed college snowflakes, a and Hollywood hypocrites. Down deep, the Democrat elites know that Bernie's affection for communism and his words and deeds to that effect will leave him wide open should he get their nomination. They are desperate to stop him. Tom Steyer is a joke. A rich joke, granted, but a joke nonetheless. And that leaves Michael Bloomberg as the favorite of the establishment Democrats. So how does Bloomberg get the nomination? In a brokered convention where Bernie fails to get the votes necessary to win the Democrat nomination, Democrats would then turn to Bloomberg, not because he makes a great candidate against Trump, but because he makes a more electable candidate than Bernie. All the media hype about the Democrats turning to Hillary in 2020 was just that, hype. Hillary Clinton's ship sailed long ago, and she knows it. But her ego will not allow her to stop coming to the media with hypothetical what-ifs about her getting into the race. Bloomberg is a very rich man, a rich, old white man, like those who the Democrats rail against at every opportunity. But to save themselves from the other old white man from Vermont, Democrats could easily derail Bernie in favor of Bloomberg. After all, the DNC brought out the sharp knives in 2016 to shove Bernie aside and protect Hillary Clinton. The Sanders crowd was angry then, but the Clinton machine appeased Bernie with many, many goodies. Still, Hillary lost to Trump. This time, if the Democrat elites try the same tactic to derail the Sanders campaign, and they will because they have no choice, no one should expect Bernie's fanatical followers to vote for another Democrat once he has been backstabbed once again. So what's the real reason that Bloomberg is running for president? First, he believes that he can buy the office because he's been able to do that in New York 3 times. I give credit today to Stephen Rosenfeld of Truthdig and Nicole Pesci of New York Daily News for their research and opinions on the subject, which I have blended with my own. Gracie Mansion, the official residence of New York's mayor since 1942, hosted billionaire Michael Bloomberg for 3 years. For 3 terms, I should have said. The first of those terms began after Bloomberg, the Republican candidate for mayor, spent an incredible $74 million to get himself elected in 2001. He spent, in effect, $99 for every vote he received. 4 years later, Bloomberg, who made his fortune selling high-tech information systems to Wall Street, had to spend even more to get himself reelected. His 2005 campaign bill came to $85 million, about $112 per vote. In 2009, he had the toughest sledding yet. Bloomberg had to first maneuver his way around term limits, then convince a distinctly unenthusiastic electorate to give him a majority. Against a lackluster Democrat Party candidate, he won that majority, but just barely, with 51% of the vote. That slim majority cost Bloomberg $102 million, or $174 a vote. Now, Bloomberg is running for president as a Democrat, arguing that he has the best chance of unseating President Trump, whom he describes as an existential threat. Could Bloomberg replicate his lavish New York City campaign spending at the national level? Could he possibly afford to shell out $174 a vote or more nationwide, or even $99 a vote? To get the answer, we'll do the math. Donald Trump won the White House with just under 63 million votes. We can safely assume that Bloomberg would need at least 63 million. At $100 a vote, A victory in November would run Bloomberg $6.3 billion. Bloomberg is currently sitting on a personal fortune of some $52 billion. He could easily afford to invest $6.3 billion in a presidential campaign, or even less on a primary. Indeed, $6.3 billion might even rate as a fairly sensible business investment. Several of the other Democrat presidential candidates are calling for various forms of wealth taxes. If the most rigorous of those was enacted, Bloomberg's grand fortune would shrink substantially by more than $3 billion next year, according to estimates. In other words, by undercutting wealth tax advocates, Bloomberg would save over $6 billion in taxes in just 2 years, enough to cover the cost of a $6.3 billion presidential campaign, give or take a couple of hundred million. Bloomberg, remember, wouldn't have to win the White House to stop a wealth tax. He just has to run a campaign that successfully paints such a tax as a clear and present danger to prosperity, a claim he's already making. Bloomberg wouldn't even need to spend $6.3 billion to get that deed done. Bernie Sanders raised $25.3 million in 2019's third quarter for his campaign. Elizabeth Warren, $24.6 million. Both candidates are collecting donations from small donors at $100 million as an annual pace. Bloomberg could spend 10 times that amount on a presidential campaign and still, given his normal annual income, end the year worth several billion dollars more than when the year started. Most Americans don't yet believe that billionaires should not exist at all. But most Americans do believe that America's super rich should not be able to buy elections or to horribly distort their incomes. But unfortunately, they can. Or at least Bloomberg will try. Here are 10 things the rest of the country should know before embracing or rejecting a Bloomberg run. Michael Bloomberg is 73 years old. He's richer than Donald Trump and every bit as self-absorbed. He paid for all three of his mayoral campaigns out of pocket. Critics point out that he bought his third term by funding a campaign to overturn New York City's term limits in 2008. New York City residents had voted for term limits twice. Bloomberg doesn't like stupid questions, as long as he can define what is stupid. He gets testy with reporters who ask about subjects he does not want to address. He infamously told a reporter, "You're a disgrace," after the journalist asked him about his campaign for a third term. Bloomberg was a Democrat until 2001, when he switched to the Republican Party to run for mayor of New York. He even hosted the Republican National Convention in Manhattan, despite the fact that most of the city's registered voters were Democrats. He left the Republican Party during his second term and sought out his third term as an independent candidate. Bloomberg banned smoking inside all New York City restaurants and bars, which went into effect in 2003 to protect New Yorkers, he said, from secondhand smoke. He then made it his mission to clear the air outdoors as well, expanding the smoking ban to parks, beaches, marinas, boardwalks, and pedestrian plazas in spring 2011. If you are a smoker in New York, Bloomberg is no friend. Under Bloomberg's watch, the Big Apple became the first city in the country to ban trans fats from all restaurants. He tried restricting the size of sugary soft drinks, such as sodas in venues, restaurants, and sidewalk carts. But the New York Supreme Court dumped his so-called soda ban down the drain. Most of America mocked Bloomberg's bid to ban the Big Gulp, especially since childhood obesity rates rose by 25% on his watch. While still mayor, Bloomberg founded Mayors Against Illegal Guns in 2006, which evolved into Every Town for Gun Safety by 2014. Bloomberg's television ads make it clear that he is dead set against the Second Amendment as written. Under Michael Bloomberg, the New York Police Department's practice of stopping people on the street, the vast majority of them being minorities, it grew from 97,296 stops in 2002 to 685,724 at its 2011 peak. In 2013, Bloomberg proclaimed that stop and frisk keeps New York safe, citing the city's lower crime rate. Now he says it was a mistake. He needs the black vote. He also has some bridge building to do among those minorities. Some motorists found themselves driven off the roads by the new bike and bus lanes that Bloomberg had championed. Americans do tend to like their cars. Michael Bloomberg supports same-sex marriage. He officiated City Hall's first gay wedding when he married two of his gay advisors in 2011 at Gracie Mansion. As mayor, he was initially coy about gay nuptials, telling reporters in 2003, quote, "I think I'll stay out of the marriage business. I've got other things to worry about." That's when he was a Republican. But by 2013, he came out swinging for same-sex marriage after becoming an independent in 2009. Despite his self-identification as a fiscal conservative, Bloomberg has long demonstrated a willingness to extend the reach of government to regulate health care. His 2020 presidential campaign now emphasizes the pursuit of universal health care and how expanding Obamacare and Medicare is the best way to achieve universal coverage. On immigration, Bloomberg has previously been very critical of border hawks who call for deportation of illegal aliens, suggesting a personal view that mass amnesty is the proper way to go. As mayor of New York, Bloomberg was lax on immigration enforcement, and he largely shirked meaningful steps to crack down on illegal immigration that was plaguing the city. So what else should the voters know about Michael Bloomberg? He is one of the most radical pro-abortion politicians in American history. When he first ran for mayor of New York in 2001, he pledged to force everyone training to become an obstetrician or a gynecologist in a city hospital to learn how to perform an abortion. He personally has donated hundreds of thousands of dollars to Planned Parenthood. His passion for abortion allowed him to appropriate $15 million from a civic revenue bond transaction that benefited Planned Parenthood. The new national headquarters of Planned Parenthood was publicly funded with tax dollars, even though that organization posted a budget of over $1 billion in 2009-2010. It's much greater now. On religious liberty issues, Bloomberg's record was just as bad. He offended Irish Catholics in 2005 when he said he wanted to march in the St. Patrick's Day parade so that he could pressure the organizers to allow homosexuality to march under its own banner. So here we had an agent of the state, the chief executive of New York City, injecting himself into a religious event so he could promote a secular agenda that would undermine its cause. The courts have long ruled that religious groups have a right to use public facilities, yet Bloomberg denied the right of an inner-city Christian church to hold religious services in a public school on Sundays, setting up a court challenge. He lost that challenge in federal district court in 2005. In 2011, the Staten Island ferry terminals had no holiday displays. Not only were religious symbols, such as the nativity scene and menorahs, banned, but Bloomberg approved the censoring of other displays, such as Christmas trees, as well. But Bloomberg's biggest insult to people of faith was the way he handled the 9/11 ceremonies on the 10th anniversary of the bombings in New York. He banned the clergy from all religions from participating. He would not allow a priest, a minister, a rabbi, or an imam to make even a short statement. He was also duplicitous as well. The same mayor who had invoked separation of church and state to institute a gag rule on religious speech was already on record promoting the building of a mosque near Ground Zero. He was in favor. He was also entirely understanding of the move by American atheists to sue New York City over two steel beams shaped like a cross that were found in the debris of the Twin Towers disaster. Those atheists objected when the cross was moved from St. Peter's Catholic Church to its new home at the 9/11 memorial. Bloomberg's radical policies on abortion and religious liberty are not known to most Americans. Now that he has set his sights on buying his way into the White House, it is time his sordid legacy becomes well known. The cries of the slaughtered unborn must be heard in this country. To quote his political campaign, Mike will get it done. When it comes to promoting abortion, the slaughter of the unborn, and curtailing religious liberty, Mike will get it done, unless the American voters refuse to let him buy yet another election. We're in some difficult times in this country. Where are the Democrats going to get candidates? We look at the elites in the Democrat Party, people like Nancy Pelosi and Adam Schiff, Maxine Waters. And we wonder, where is the new blood going to come from among Democrats? You know, when politicians run for office, they tell us that they're going to go in and make all kinds of changes. They're going to change this. They're going to change that. They're not going to change anything. The two-party system controls everything. How many Democrats do you see parting company with Nancy Pelosi on any issue? I venture to say that if Pelosi was in favor of holding fireworks in your hand until they go off, Democrats would meekly sit there and nod. Over on the Republican side, once in a great while, they'll split from one another. Mitt Romney did that when he voted to impeach the president. He'll pay a price for that. The bottom line is that when these people are elected as freshman congressmen or congresswomen, they are assigned to a seat in the back. Some are put on committees like Ocasio-Cortez, who should not be on any committee and, frankly, should not even be in the United States, a country that she hates and tells us every day. But they are to keep their heads down. Make no waves. I remember my friend Jesse Helms telling me as we talked about his latest book that he was writing, and I was helping him with that, and he said, you know, I have to admire Hillary Clinton as much as I dislike her. She came into the Senate, she kept her head down, she kept her comments to herself. I wouldn't be surprised to see her run for president one day, he said. He wasn't being complimentary of Hillary Clinton's stance in politics, but he was admitting that when they come in, after all of these promises about what they're going to do to change things, they become sheep. Republicans, Democrats, they become sheep. Democrats a little more than Republicans, but nobody stands up and bucks the system. You take someone like Ocasio-Cortez, she stands up and mouths, but she doesn't get anything done. This is a bartender. She had no experience in running a business, much less trying to run a country. This is the woman that tells us that she and young people are much smarter than the rest of us. We didn't gain anything in our many years on earth. She gained it all in a few short years tending bar. That's where we are in our country, and it really bothers me. I'd like to go back to how I started. I do welcome the listeners in Arizona of KBTK, the Big Talker. They're in Flagstaff, Prescott, Arizona, an absolutely beautiful area. Sedona is close by, and we had the pleasure of touring over there. We had a guide named Blair who showed us all around that beautiful country. So thank you, Arizona, for joining our list. We have others in Arizona, but this is the newest addition to our commentaries, and we thank you. And we thank you. You can reach me at tom@tomjoyner.net. That's tom@tomjoyner.net. I'll be back again next week, God willing. Same time and same station.